Hey, thanks for joining us on this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry, brought to you by Truck Envy. Speaking of Truck Envy, Dave, I'm going to sidebar for a second.
Yeah.
You pulled into the parking lot in something new.
I did. I pulled the trigger on a brand new Toyota Tundra.
Joining the Tundra gang.
The Tundra gang, yes. Got you have one.
My brother's got one.
Your dad. My nephew just got a brand new one. Yeah, I just couldn't pass it up. They're just fantastic. Right?
Absolutely. Hey, sidebar out of the way. Nice looking truck.
Thank you.
We checked it out a second ago. But what we wanted to get into this episode, and full disclosure, we are recording this a week ahead of time because you and I are going to be in Redding shooting.
Yes.
By the time this goes to air.
Yeah, we will be. This will be Sunday. Yeah, so you and I will be competing for number one on the podium.
Some podium. Yeah.
Well,
maybe
our own
podium.
We'll
stack some chairs at the house and
stand
on them.
The podium at our Airbnb.
Hey, so we wanted to get into this stuff. Some of it I forget year to year, but right off the bat, let's get into how the tags are drawn. There is an order to the way they come out. So go ahead. Let's dive into that real quick.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of folks have asked questions about the draw cycle. You know, hunters are worried about, like, well, if I put in for cow elk and for bull elk and I pull my cow tag, then I'm not going to get my elk, my bull tag, and,
right,
you know, it's going to kick me out and this and that. So,
well, and now with moose.
And, yeah, now the moose. So there is a specific draw cycle that when they hit that button to start tossing numbers out there for all these hunts— the first group are your silver state tags, okay? So if you're putting in for a silver state as well as a regular tag, if you get the silver state, well,
you're out.
Good job, man, because that's hard to do.
The silver state, that is where you can hunt
any unit in the state. And
with any weapon, right?
With any weapon at any season.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you within your area. So if your area has... because some areas have like those late hunts in December.
Right.
You can hunt that area in December, but you couldn't go hunt, say, area 16 in December.
Gotcha.
That
so it
hunt
has
doesn't
to be an
exist.
Open unit.
Yeah, it has to be an open unit and an open time frame for you to go and hunt with the silver state. But yeah, that gives you, that's like a governor's tag. That gives you, you're
carte blanche.
You're out there.
Yeah.
You're out there. So that one's awesome.
So that's first up.
Yep. Second group are the partner in wildlife tags.
Now, partner in wildlife, how that differs is you have to adhere to the weapon stuff as well.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. If it is an archery season, it's an archery. You have
but
to
you can hunt
that.
The whole thing.
Correct.
If you until you fill, basically.
Until you fill, And then you have the junior mule deer antlered hunts is group three. Those will all get drawn. And then group four is you get into your the bighorn sheep, ram hunts, you get into the California sheep, you get, you know, Rocky Mountain sheep, California, you get into the deserts, and now you start getting into some of the other, the antlered elk, antelope, antelope shorter than ears, mule deer, mountain goat, bear, and now the moose.
Moose is coming up last.
That is just what's drawn.
Oh, all in
so
that chunk.
In that group.
Okay.
So group four will be all of those hunts.
Gotcha.
Which are couple hundred hunts because
right.
You're talking all the areas and stuff. And then you go into the group five, which is your elk depredation antlered hunts and your management bighorn sheep ram hunt.
Okay.
Yeah, which is like the one horned hunt. And then you go into group six, which is your ewe hunts, the desert bighorn sheep ewe hunt, the antlerless elk. That's all in group six. So I think I had mentioned that in group four, but it's not. I'm sorry about that. That's the horns longer than ears is in group four. Shorter than ears is in group six.
Okay.
Yeah. And then group seven is your spike elk hunt.
Okay.
That's it. Yep. And then group eight is your elk depredation antlerless hunt. If you kind of read the map a little bit, how they're doing it is all of the prestigious, like, tags everybody wants all go first. So you've got your antlered deer, you have your bull elk or antlered elk hunt, you have your ram hunts, you have the moose hunt, you know, you've got everything that, like, people are jazzed about, the antelope longer than ears. Then after that, so if you draw that, you're golden.
Right.
You know, but if you don't draw that and you also put in for a depredation hunt or a shorter than ears hunt or an antlerless hunt, those are the later groups, groups 5, 6, 7, and 8. Okay. So you're kind of safe. I mean, if you can put in for antelope longer than ears and antelope shorter than ears, and your shorter than ears hunt is not going to trump your longer than ears hunt.
Gotcha.
Because that draw happens first.
Back up for a second. Where does bear come?
So let's see.
Was
bear,
that group four, I think you said?
Yeah, group four is bear.
Reason I ask, I just had a discussion with somebody on this. And, you know, I buy a bonus point every year for bear. And one of these days I'll actually put in for it, especially with the number I saw on the pine nuts last year.
My gosh, yeah.
Just crawling with them. But it's one of those hunts where I kind of look at it as not as desirable for me because we're surrounded with states that have over-the-counter tags.
Yeah.
So, like, I get that veteran tag in Idaho.
Yeah.
It's $28. I can go hunt bear every single year in Idaho for $28.
Yeah. And Oregon, I think, as well.
Oregon's
right now,
over-the-counter. Yep.
They've got an over-the-counter tag. They're having a heck of a bear issue there. And non-resident and resident tags, I think, are $19.
Exactly.
For bear?
I mean, one of these days I'll pull the trigger and instead of doing bonus points, I'll actually put in for the Nevada bear hunt. It's one of those things like, man, I can go and do bear anytime I want.
Yeah,
like
anywhere else. Yeah. Just about. Yeah. And my thing is I've had bear.
Oh, here we go.
I know. We've had this, you know, I just, if I don't eat it, I don't hunt it. So, and I've yet to have good bear. So anyone out there sitting there going, what are you talking about, Catalano? Bear's the best. It's amazing. Send me a recipe.
Yeah.
Because the several different ways that I've had bear, and I've had Idaho bear, Oregon bear, Alaska bear, Nevada bear, Colorado bear.
None of it does it for me.
And none of it, it all tastes like the same thing to me, a big greasy spoonful of Crisco.
Yeah.
So I've got people that don't know how to cook making it for me.
Well, hey, quick plug for the Nevada Backcountry text line. 775-884-9910.
Yeah.
Text us your bear recipes.
I would love it because
we got to make a convert out of Dave.
Yes, because I've got access to some bear meat, and I really don't want to touch it until I know what I'm doing with it because I don't want to waste it.
And that makes sense. You'd hate to see it go to waste. But, man, all that, the fat is great for baking with.
And I keep seeing that. I keep seeing it on some of these podcasts and some of these shows where they're rendering the bear fat down. They use that later for baking and for other cooking applications. And I'm like, it just hits me wrong. So please convert me.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of great bear hunting opportunities out there, and I don't do them because
you don't want to eat
it. I don't want to eat it.
Now, you do have to be careful. We've talked about this before, but trichinosis is a real thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You got to make sure the stuff is cooked. Don't do your typical like elk backstrap, flip, and then eat. You got to cook it all the way through. But I like bear. One of these days, I'll actually put in for the Nevada bear hunt. But if anybody listening to the show, man, if you draw a bear tag and you want to go hunt the pine nuts, let me know. There's a problem with them down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so don't be afraid to put in for multiple things.
Or
because
just anything you want, whatever it is you want to hunt. You're definitely not going to lose out because if you don't draw any of those tags, all you got to do is keep an eye on that first come, first serve.
Oh, and there's good stuff. Man, we had Lydia Teal, vice president at NBU.
Yeah.
She was on the show. And, man, people have seen good. Randy Newberg talked about seeing an elk tag on there.
Yeah, that he was going to click it, and his wife said something, and by the time he turned back, it was gone.
Yeah, so there are good tags.
Well,
for sure.
And there's several sheep have been on there over the years. Plenty of bull elk. A friend of mine pulled a bull elk tag off of there last year that he wanted. It was his holy grail tag. It popped up. He grabbed it. He loaded his gear. And 2 days later, he was hunting, and he shot an absolutely just an elk of a lifetime.
Hey, that would be cool.
So, I mean, that's showing you that the system works. You just got to be diligent because I think the last statistic showed that a tag, bull elk tag or any of the antlered tags, they last, I think it was something like 3.2 seconds. Before somebody clicks it in. And then remember, don't be clicking thinking then you're going to think about it. because if you don't end up purchasing that tag, you can't get back on first come, first serve for 7 days.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
It kind of kicks
you off. I knew
they
closed it to non-residents.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there was an issue there for a while where individuals were loading their cart up with tags, like, clicking, 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 clicking.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like holding tags until, because you have like, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 8, 10 minutes to consider it and check out and all that stuff. And it was just clogging the system up something horrible. And then they would let all those tags go, and then they'd get back on the next day and do the same program. So it was, if you don't purchase the tag, you're out of the first come first draw for 7 days. I think it's 7 days.
Okay. Coming up this show, we've covered the draw order. Man, I feel like we keep having to do dispelling rumors about this moose hunt thing.
Oh, yes.
But,
my gosh.
Yeah, we'll get into why Nevada is having a moose hunt. Hint, hint, it's not a money grab. There's an issue with the herd in the state of Nevada. We'll also get into the commission meeting, and then maybe a little bit we'll banter back and forth about season kickoff traditions.
Yes.
So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to Nevada Backcountry and 99.1. If you're just joining us, the show is Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. So we just kind of wrapped up on draw order. Now, like I was talking about last segment, I feel like we keep having to do these shows because we keep getting either messages or there's forums right now that have all this misinformation about the moose hunt. So this segment, let's dive into the moose hunt. First, a big shout out to Hunt and House Archery Center for sponsoring the show. Dave, the moose hunt. We kind of covered the non-resident stuff on a previous episode. There's not going to be any non-resident tags.
No, because you have to have 10 resident tags in order to produce one non-resident tag.
Right.
Except in special circumstances that have been through with the commissions and the county boards, like the goat hunt.
Yes.
There's one non-resident and there's what, 4 goat tags total?
Yeah, something like that. It's
and
pretty
then,
slim.
Yeah, and then the new archery, non-resident archery desert tag.
Oh, yeah.
But I think in total there might be 10 tags now for archery.
Okay. So it might meet the regs.
So it
on
may meet the regs. So that's it. But there is absolutely no non-resident
Moose hunt
in Nevada.
The big one now that I'm seeing is that we don't have the herd size to support a hunt that this is nothing more than a money grab by Endow. Right off the bat, Dave's got some great information on this, but the big issue, the reason we're having a moose hunt, is the bull to cow ratio in the state of Nevada.
Yes.
So right now we're sitting at, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we're at like a 1-to-1, one bull for one cow is the herd ratio in the state,
pretty close. It's just a little over a 1 bull to 1 cow ratio, just a little over that. So pick a number to be like 1.5 bulls to a cow.
From a biology perspective, as a biologist, you don't want to see that, correct?
No, not at all. That is a bad ratio. For something like this, you want to see somewhere in the range of about like 7 cows to 1 bull ratio, like a 7-to-1.
For a healthy herd.
For a healthy herd, for a healthy, sustainable herd. So the thing is, your Department of Wildlife is seeing a lot of twins. You're seeing a lot of cows during, after the breeding season when they're having their young. You're starting to see a cow with 2 calves. So that's showing a great deal of growth, a high growth potential for this particular moose herd. That's a good thing as long as the ratio needs to be managed. That has to start getting to a balance of some sort.
And that's why with this hunt, there are no cow hunts.
No,
it's strictly, bulls only.
It is strictly an antlered hunt. That's the exact reason why. It's strictly an antlered hunt. And there's somewhere in the range of 120 to 130 moose in the state right now that are residents.
Resident moose,
okay. In the state of Nevada year round.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. I know you love when I do this.
Yes.
But have they done any sort of research as far as why there are so many bulls down here?
There is some work being done there. You know, several years ago, several moose were collared so that we were able to track, see what their patterns are, see where they're wintering, see where they're summering, and all of that. And with that came a lot of other data collection. Now, going through all of that data now and analyzing it in many different ways to determine what caused some of these variations. That hasn't come out yet. That particular report hasn't come out yet. Why the ratio is the way it is.
Yeah.
I can't really throw a guess out there either, because I'm not sure. There's a lot of talk about where did these herds, you know, where did the initial moose come from? And then at that point, they just kind of kept coming in there for a while. And then they started breeding in the state and creating a larger herd. And now we are where we are.
What kind of problems does having that like 1-to-1 ratio cause? You mentioned the twinning that cows, is it like inbreeding going on? Or?
Well, you're going to definitely have that. I mean, right. When you have a 1-to-1 ratio, but you're also going to have, there's going to be a great deal of aggression between these bulls for mating females.
Oh, right. Okay.
So you could end up in a situation of a lot of animals being injured fatally, if not just, you know, maimed. You can come up with a whole slew of different scenarios when you've got 5, 6, 7, 10 bulls all fighting to mate the same female
cow. Yeah.
It's gonna look like a 70s discotheque.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good visual. Hey, so I got another question I'm gonna put you on the spot about. Somebody told me this, I don't know if it's true, and I don't know if you know or not. The bull on the cover of the hunt book, was that picture actually taken in Wyoming?
I do not know. Me personally, and this is just through conversations of hunting friends and colleagues and such, is that that's a moose that was actually in the state.
At one point.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, or it could still be here. That could be one of our resident bulls. That I don't know.
You know, I thought that sounded goofy, but here's where that comes in, is one of the forums I was reading about the conspiracy theory that this is nothing more than a money grab. You know, they're talking about how we don't even have the population to support a hunt, blah, 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 blah. And somebody got on there and chimed in and said, you notice how it's a picture from Wyoming. It's not even a Nevada bull on the cover of the Nevada hunt book. And then people start feeding off that. And
yeah. I like to know where they got Wyoming out of that picture.
Yeah. It's a, for sure, a good Shiras moose, but
yeah.
Somebody was talking about how, we don't, like I said, the whole population argument came up
and
it went off the rails quickly.
You and I monitor the social media feeds quite a bit. There's all kinds of Google biologists out there that think they know what they're talking about, and a lot of them don't. You know, there's so much research going into all of Nevada's wildlife, anywhere from the small mammals to raptors to songbirds to big game to fish, on and on and on and on and on. Decisions aren't made, you know, like they're pulling something out of a hat and like, hey, this is our decision.
I saw a moose. Let's have a moose hunt.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, look, it's like a fortune cookie. Hey, check it out. This is what we're doing. It's years of collecting data and monitoring and tracking. The satellite collars for a moose are 5 figures. So you're not just throwing that on like, hey, this will just shut everyone up. No.
Yeah.
You're out there collecting data and you're making solid scientific decisions for Nevada's wildlife and the health of the wildlife, as well as the habitat that they solely need.
And this is another one of those putting you on the spot. How long will that take to get to a healthy ratio for cows to bulls? Say that there's 3 tags or whatever, and 3 bull. Like, what's the proposed timeline for getting this thing kind of within standards?
That's a tough one to answer.
Too many variables?
Way too many variables. You've got weather conditions. You've got habitat degradation. You've got potential disease issues that could pop up at any time. There's so many variables.
Gotcha.
That's a tough one. people are going to hear this, our show, and they're going to go, well, if they're only giving out two tags and it's a one-to-one ratio, why aren't they giving out 50 tags? Well, you just can't. There's a process. You just can't go in there and pretend or to think you can fix the issue on one grandiose hunt.
One and done, one moose hunt, and then it's over.
How well's that worked out for, for just about anything, a one and done?
You got anything else on the moose? I think that about, you know, I keep saying every time we do these, well, that about covers that. No, we're done. I'm sure something else will crop up and we'll be talking about moose again. But as far as this and what we're talking about today, any other things you want to cover?
Yeah. So this moose hunt, for whoever the lucky few people are that will end up with this tag, I know we've preached this numerous times. I can guarantee you this isn't going to be like, you know, a possible like antelope hunt where you can drive along and you see it on the side of the road over there and it's 100 yards off and they're...
Oh, like a weekend deal.
This is not going to be a weekend hunt. These moose are not in areas that are easily accessible. You're not driving to them.
It's an undertaking.
It's going to be a great deal of work. So if you don't have the friend group or the will of your own to actually complete this mission, just think about it. Because, yeah, this is not going to be like driving out there on a Friday and like, hey, you know, this was such an easy hunt. Drove up. He was standing on the road, winched him into the back of the truck. It's going to be an undertaking. These things are...
You bring that up and it makes me think about a friend of ours who... probably hanging out with right now at the house in Redding, but he lives up in Alaska, and he was showing us pictures last year where he literally shot it from like the back porch or something.
Yeah, that was...
So it's not going to be
Alaska.
Like that.
Yeah, and that was a cow. He had a cow tag, and him and his boy were heading out, and literally had just turned off the main highway off onto a dirt road, and I think he said that he wasn't 60 yards off the dirt road. And there's a cow,
there's a
cow moose standing at 100, you know, not even 100 yards, just sitting there. And he's like, oh, that'll work.
That's Alaska. Coming up next, let's talk a little bit about the commission meeting, the agenda for that, all the tag allocations, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's all coming up on Nevada Backcountry. Thanks for joining us again on Nevada Backcountry, brought to you by Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight. Man, committee meeting notes. Off air, you and I were just going through this stuff, Dave. There's a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah.
We'll try to be as clear and concise as possible. There's a couple here that I notice you put an asterisk next to. That those might take up some of our time. They'll certainly take up some time at the meeting.
We're airing here on the... 5th.
Yes.
So in the future, we're gonna be getting our listeners this commission update and pre-report basically prior to the meeting so that you can have some information if you do decide to participate at some of these meetings. Because there are some pretty significant workshops on this particular one that are coming up.
Oh, absolutely.
That are gonna have an effect.
Yeah, you know, one in particular, that 12B, we'll get to that. We're going through the list, but let's start with number 8, the Heritage Account Principal Project. So this is for the South Shell land acquisition.
Yeah, it's 1,720 acres of wildlife habitat in the Shell Creek Range.
Go ahead, talk to me about that.
It's out near Ely.
Yeah, talk to me about that. Why is this an issue, and why is this on the agenda for this meeting?
Well, it's on the agenda because any type of acquisitions that the Department of Wildlife is proposing has to go through a process. You know, it has to go out to the CABs. It has to then go to the commission. It usually has a reading or two where they'll discuss it. They'll talk about its benefits. Why should we be doing this? What benefits will it have for sportsmen, men and women in the future?
To purchase.
Yeah. Okay. So this is for the funding to purchase this particular piece of land. It would be in addition to the existing wildlife management area that already exists out there in Ely, Nevada. It's fantastic wildlife habitat. It is some wintering grounds for, you know, elk and deer and antelope.
Okay.
So it has a lot of important features that we would like to preserve.
I'll play the, I'm John Q. Public. Who are they buying this from?
That I do not know, to be honest.
Okay.
I don't know who owns, I'm kind of throwing a dart at the wall here. I'm going to say it's, I'm assuming it's an old ranch.
Okay, you know, one of these like heritage ranches.
Yeah, kind of like the
there.
Triple C Ranch when that was acquired, you know, almost 15, 18 years ago, the Triple C Ranch there right outside of Ely.
You're
probably
assuming
a ranch.
It's
assuming it's a ranch somewhere in the Shell Creek Range.
Okay.
You know, once it's purchased, it can't, it's locked.
The state wouldn't sell it off.
No,
okay.
It's locked up. Certain organizations buy ranches and use them as wildlife habitat or preserves
right,
or what have
right.
you, kind of trying to think of the name
like
of the
Ted Turner's place up
yeah,
there in Montana.
Where it's in law now that that place can never be developed.
Okay.
It has to stay. It has to, it's what's called land of retention, I think it is. It's the land has to be retained as it is.
Gotcha.
Can't be developed, can't be anything. There was a family in Montana or Wyoming that homesteaded close to 1 million acres back
Whoa.
In the 1800s.
I
mean, it's a it was one of the largest, if not the largest, privately owned ranches in the country. And they had offers from developers in the hundreds of millions, and they ended up selling it to a wildlife NGO, nonprofit.
Good for them.
For pennies on the dollar compared to what they could have gotten from the developers because they wanted the land to be maintained in its natural state.
I saw that documentary, Yellowstone?
Yeah, something like that. It's right. It's like adjacent to Yellowstone.
The guy that danced with wolves.
Oh, jeez, you're talking the show.
Yeah.
You're killing me.
All right, so moving on, that's item number 8. Item number 9, this stuff starts to get kind of interesting and I'm sure there will be some passionate public comment on some of this.
Yeah.
Item 9 is the request from the state of Utah for the desert bighorn sheep. So that's taking some of our Nevada bighorn sheep and selling, giving, transferring.
So it's usually some kind of a trade. You know, I did not read the full document, but if approved, it is for possible action. So they would receive a unknown amount of bighorn sheep.
Okay.
And I say unknown because I don't know, but once this is approved, if it is, there will be a number provided to the public, like 10, 12, 15, whatever it might be, will be translocated into the state of Utah to help their population. These are good things. I know people like, oh, don't take our sheep, man. That's not cool. This is good stuff because you are helping genetically wise because now you're not getting any kind of bottleneck.
Okay.
So you're bringing sheep from one population into another population, kind of having a stronger genetic base, because now you don't have some of these populations are kind of geographically like locked in.
Is there any, what do they call that, like a biological island or whatever when you have, like what California is experiencing with that population of mountain lions over there, where it's basically now been developed and cut off. So there's this genetically isolated population of mountain lions. And
right.
They have all kinds of issues with them.
That's a benefit to this.
Okay. Now, is there any quid pro quo to this type of stuff? Like, if we're going to give you bighorn, do we get some of their bighorn sheep?
We could. I mean, it all depends on how the game division and the commission, as well as the entire department, what we may be in need of. It could be antelope. It could be some more bighorn sheep. It could be turkeys. It could be take your pick. Who knows? So it's, you know, eventually we scratch their backs. They scratch our backs over time.
Because donning my John Q. Public hat, I would say, come on, man. Sound like Joe Biden. Come on, man.
The thing.
But of all the animals, the bighorn sheep, with all the pneumonia issues, everything else, I could see there being some of that, like, you know, why are you taking from our state to give somewhere else when we need them? We currently have hunts shutting down, units shutting down because of a lack of population in there. So of all the things to wheel and deal and make a trade with, why bighorn sheep? I guess just not looking at the big picture.
Yeah. You got to kind of open up and look at the big picture because there may be variables there that we are not seeing. Maybe Utah is having an issue with certain parts of their herds, like you were stating with the mountain lions. Maybe they've got a little bit of genetic bottlenecking occurring, and they're like, hey, man, could you guys do us a solid? We need to help this herd survive. We need to help this herd get stronger. You know, we're going to provide them with some genetic diversity. In turn, you know, if you hunt in Utah, this could be a benefit for you because now we're not losing hunt opportunities in another state. These things are not being done in a vacuum.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, fair enough.
So that's why people are allowed to come to the commission, voice their opinion, and ask questions. They like having questions. You know, nobody wants to have somebody come up to the podium and just lambaste you and then walk away from the podium, just holler at you about what you're doing all wrong without having an opportunity to explain why things are being done. Guarantee you that the Department of Wildlife has definitely looked into this situation, gone through it with a fine-tooth comb to see how it can benefit them as well as us and maintain our herds without hurting any particular herd. Again, it's very
big
well
picture,
thought out.
Good thing.
It's, yes, yeah. Big picture, good thing, because there may be a time where we may be going to Utah and asking for the exact same thing, saying, hey, we had this issue come up. A lot of sheep ended up dying. Can you help us out?
Let's see. Moving on, let's skip 10 and 11 and jump into 12. Let's take a quick break here, Dave, because I have a feeling we're not going to get to season kickoff traditions this episode.
No, it's going to have to be the next episode.
Yeah, we're only about halfway through, and the next two items on here, these are going to eat up some time. I got my two cents, as always, on them. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back on Nevada Backcountry. Segment here on Nevada Backcountry. First three flew by. We are not going to get to season kickoff traditions. We'll save that for a future episode. We didn't even make it halfway through the commission meeting stuff. And this next one, we're going to jump to item 12. There's a couple things in here that probably eat up this last segment. But right off the bat, I guess this would be 12A. This is shed hunting and big game skull collecting. So they're proposing some changes to shed hunting in the state of Nevada.
There's been a little bit of a unlawful.
A little bit?
Yeah. I'm trying to be nice here, Henry. I'm okay. Trying to be nice. Yeah, there's some activity going on where there's some illegal people are kind of going out there whenever they want on their own whim and doing the shed hunting. One of the big issues with allowing shed hunting year-round, it was a sticky wicket years ago when these regulations came on, is we have to give the animals a break.
Before we even dive into that, I want to point out to people listening, because I was one of those, like, you got to be kidding me. I can't pick up sheds anymore. Get out of here with this nonsense. The government doesn't own this. These are very specific counties.
Yes.
With essentially the bulk of the population of elk.
Correct.
In the state of Nevada. So
yeah.
If I'm out chasing chucker in North Washoe County and I'm picking up mule deer sheds, this isn't affecting me. This is specifically, I can't remember all, but it's like White Pine, Elko. It's where the elk populations are.
Yeah, because elk antlers are the big
moneymaker.
The big moneymakers, yeah. And it's the one everyone wants to find when you're out there. You know, sure, finding a little fork and horn, you're like, oh, that's cute. But you find some of these big elk, it's like, oh, dang, this is awesome.
So resting the population.
Yeah, you gotta give the poor animals a break, because there's certain shed hunting groups out there. They go out there in masses,
mm-hmm.
And that is main reason why they're going out. They're not just going out to camp and enjoy the outdoor experience and then walking a trail and finding an antler. They are going all over the countryside on ATVs, breaking trails, crushing brush, because they don't want to walk to find the antlers. They want to get to them as fast as possible, because to them it's a business. They load up four or five pickup trucks with antlers, and they go and sell them. So Anyway,
I don't know. You would know better than I do as far as how big a problem this is. But I know there's a handful of accounts that we follow, Nevada Backcountry, on Instagram that are shed hunting accounts.
Yeah.
And I've seen pictures when this went into effect of guys taking pictures on opening day of ATV trails going into a stand of Quakies fresh. So I know that people are out there. I hesitate to call it poaching, but I guess that's what it would be.
Well, it's just it's unlawful activity. And this particular commission, Regulation 518, is trying to combat that, trying to bring up new processes to better capture the unlawful activity that's going on.
How do you combat that without just putting more boots on the ground in these areas?
Well, it could be that. It could merely be just more boots on the ground. Again, our chief game warden, Christy Knight, will present on that and probably present some of the potential law enforcement changes in relation to...
Are they currently using drones?
No, not that I know of.
Because that would seem like the low-hanging fruit to me anyway of like, okay, you don't want to pressure the herds anymore and you're trying to combat people pressuring the herds too much.
Yeah.
So instead of having more officers tromping around out in the woods out there, why not just use a drone?
I mean, that's a good option. Just, have you ever used a drone?
Just the goofy little ones my kid plays with. Oh, yeah, not like a real deal drone.
Yeah,
no.
some of the larger ones that we use for some of the survey work and stuff, it sounds like four or five groups of bees. I
mean, they
can be fairly loud. But, I mean, not saying that is the reason why they're not being used. They could be being used. There's a lot of people that contract for drone work. So
next big one, this is going to get people hot. We'll go to 12B, waiting periods for bighorn sheep and mountain goat.
And moose,
okay. Oh, yeah, it says right there, a moose and mountain goat. So they're talking about making them a once-in-a-lifetime tag. How many people do you know that have drawn multiple, let's say, desert bighorn sheep tags in their life?
Three.
You do know three.
I know three, and I know one person who's drawn three.
No kidding.
Yes.
Does that guy buy a lotto ticket or gal?
He really should, because he shot his first one. Man, it had to have been back in the 70s.
Okay.
Waited his time. First year back in, he drew.
Whoa.
Got another one. And then his third tag was, I think he had 3 points.
Okay.
And he shot it in 2010 or 2011. So now he's putting in again.
Oh.
For the fourth time.
So I don't know the guy, but I know somebody's granddad who has drawn two.
Yeah.
But only one person.
Yeah, the other two people I know, they've drawn two.
Okay, so they're proposing to limit this to once in a lifetime. I'm assuming for people like you and I, well, you've drawn one, so not you, but me, someone that has not drawn one, to give people who have not drawn a sheep tag more opportunities to draw.
And that's basically what this is doing. It's allowing the people that have maxed out points or 15, 20 points, giving them a little bit of an edge to actually get out there and hunt. Me, myself, so I've already harvested my desert ram.
Right.
I am totally fine with that being the only time I get to. Now, on that particular deal.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. You can still put in for the Silver State tag.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So if you want, you can start putting in for the Silver State tag for sheep. For any of your sheep, for any of your hunts, that's still allowing you a chance to get back out there. It's just in a totally different category now. Now you're in the Silver State tag group trying to get a sheep tag or a goat tag or a moose tag.
Immediately, what I was going to jump to is if I'm a guy, let's say I got one back in the 90s, and now I've built back up, you know, I did the waiting period or whatever.
Yeah.
I built back up my points. I've spent that money with the state, and now the state says, hey, it's once in a lifetime. You can't put in anymore. I got to be honest. I'd be sitting there kind of pissed off going, well, you owe me a refund.
Right.
Then.
I don't think it would apply to somebody who harvested their animal. And don't quote me on this, but this is kind of how I've read a little bit of this. So if you've already harvested one, say, prior to this law,
it's
this
not
regulation,
retroactive.
I don't think it is.
Oh.
I do not think it's retroactive. So if this passes and it is for the 24 hunt season moving forward, if you draw your tag in 24 and harvest your ram,
then that's
or not
it.
Harvest your ram, because it's a get it or don't get it thing. I don't know. I don't know if there's a stipulation in there. If you don't get a ram, you get to put back in 10 years. I don't know that. But from that point on, it's a one-time gig. It's it. And a lot of other states have that. A lot of other states, it's a one and done. That was your opportunity, and you're out of the draw for life now.
Yeah, now that's how somebody Idaho is with moose.
Now
yeah.
let somebody else have their opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, Idaho does
me,
that exact
I had 23
thing.
Points when I drew mine. That's a long time. And then you figure I have to wait 10 more years, and then if I have to wait another 20 years, that'll put me in my 80s.
You can still do it, Dave.
Oh, I'll be able to
the
do
Dave-inator.
It. Yeah, I'll still be able to do it.
No, okay, so that changes my perspective a little bit
on
this.
And I'll do
this.
It with my bow.
80 years old. Yeah, I'll wheel you out there,
yeah,
Dave.
I'll have one of those electric cool like track
ones. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That does change my perspective a little bit, because thinking about people that maybe have built back up to say 15, 20 points, and now the state's going to say, well, you can't put in again. I could see there being an issue there where you're going, well, hey, I want a refund then.
Yeah, yeah. Then, that just doesn't seem ethical either to just kind of chop the hammer there and say, well, thanks for your 15 years of donations.
Right.
Yeah, I don't see
Okay, so this wouldn't be happening. A retro, or you don't think it'd be a retroactive deal?
No. The commission and the department and the public who's there will have an opportunity to put in their 2 cents on it. Then some changes can be made accordingly.
Right.
And then it'll be brought back.
I think that about covers everything we can get to. Like I said, we'll do some of this in an episode coming up at some point, because there's still a lot in there. But sincere thanks to our show sponsors, Truck Envy, Legacy Sports International, Hunt and House Archery Center. And that about does it. Hopefully you and I are shooting well right now.
Oh, we will be. There's no doubt about it.
Good. Hey, thank you everybody for tuning in to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry.